Now we're back here this morning on News Radio K-Man in Focus. This hour, we'll have a couple different segments. We'll have Pawnee Mental Health Executive Director Robin Cole later this hour talking their pancake feed they had earlier this week, Pancakes for Pawnee. But we're going to start things off here with Dr. Timothy Schaefer, K-State Assistant Professor of Communication Studies and Assistant Director for the Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy.
It's good to be here.
Glad to have you in here.
I like the music, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a nice new intro we have here for In Focus, and done it for a couple weeks now. I like it. It's a nice change-up.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago, NPR was changing some of their intro music to one of their shows, and it caused this whole kind of response that people, you know, you get attached, you get accustomed to these things. You don't realize it of how, like, the intro here to In Focus, I can think of it in my head.
Yeah.
And so I'll have to adjust.
But yeah.
That's okay. It sounds good.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I think Stephen worked really hard on that. So
I imagine so.
Kudos to him for putting that together. So what's new with you here this month?
All of last week, actually, I was away out of state doing a variety of things connected to civil discourse. So I was at Winthrop University, a public university in Rock Hill, South Carolina. So kind of suburbs of Charlotte, ish. And so gave a talk and a workshop with faculty around kind of civil discourse and how this plays out in the way that they're teaching and how they're engaging people. And so they very interestingly are really thinking about this across their campus and their community. And so that was really exciting. And then in the middle of the week, I was in some conversations with Clemson University and South Carolina State University, the two institutions that are land grants for extension in South Carolina, similar to K-State here, around civil discourse. And then the final part of the week was actually in Hilton Head, which was both wonderful and very cold. So it was very deceiving, I'll put it that way. We had a wonderful room overlooking the ocean, literally just right there. And it was like 40 degrees. So, all the South Carolinians were not going outside. Our kids were adamant. They went along. So they played in the sand. And in fact, they even got in the water at one point. And a comment that got made was, the only people who get in the water at this time of the year are the Canadians. And then our kids were out there. So they had a good time. But it was the South Carolina School Board Association, their annual conference. And so I was invited to be one of the keynote speakers talking about largely this relationship between civil discourse and democracy and education, and what do we do at that level of the school board, because schools and boards of education play an essential role. These are one of the most democratic institutions, locally kind of responsive, elected, all of that, and how do we think about their functionality in some really significant ways, both how they engage one another, especially when we think about a board being representative of a community, and sometimes that's fairly homogenous and sometimes it's not, right? It can be really diverse, and how do we think about those questions, but also how do they engage those who are beyond kind of their organizational structure, right? So the diverse publics, the people who have concerns, right? The parents, the other stakeholders, things like that. So it was really interesting. It's always a good reminder, because I spend a lot of time in kind of the university world, of how other organizations that are committed to kind of the sustaining and the sustainability and the development of a culture, right, and passing on history and learning and education with kind of this explicit public purpose, like, you know, schools, to be with them and to understand, like, all the complexities that they're wrestling with, of, like, the same things that we wrestle with here, right, of what's the funding like, what's the or the expectations, the testing we have to do, all of this is wrapped up, and then underneath it is fundamentally, like, a school is, as it's referred to from our colonial period, right, one of these pillars of the republic. This is the common school, the public school is essential, and so it was really good to be with them. So that was last week, and then the next week, actually, I'll be over in Kansas City at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, doing some similar things. So it struck me that it's been a busy couple of weeks here.
Well, and you know, I've had some family who lived in South Carolina for a little while, and you know, the demographics are a little different mm-hmm. here than
yes.
Kansas, but very conservative area of the country here. Mm-hmm. Are they open to some of the things that were being discussed?
Yeah, well, I think that was one of the most striking features, and this is where it, I think, is distinct in some ways, not exclusively, but distinct in some significant ways from Kansas, is that they have a history of racial segregation. They have boards that represent some communities that are predominantly or almost exclusively African American or white, and I think those places where they have the opportunity, and this is really where some of the conversation, or kind of speaking to knowing some of these are some of the factors of how do you engage these kinds of questions that are not always the most comfortable or the easiest to kind of think about and wrestle with. And for me, that is, I think, when we talk about civility, right, it's, there are, and I think I've noted this previously, but in our book called A Crisis of Civility, one of the contributors, Anthony Layden, is a philosopher, and he talks about civility is kind of the manners, right? It's this kind of following the rules. It's politeness, fundamentally, which is good. And there's also civility as kind of responsiveness, right? What is our obligation to one another as citizens, as people in relationship with one another? And it's being able to have both that sense of kind of the manners and the etiquette, the politeness, along with that deeper sense of responsibility to each other that requires us to sometimes engage tensions, right? There's going to be inevitably conflict. Well, how do we navigate that? How do we have the tools, the processes to be able to articulate it, to name it, and then find ways to kind of work through that rather than just acting like whatever this point of division is that doesn't exist or it's not affecting us. And when we think back here, right, we may not have necessarily the same demographics, the issues and topics and things are different, but fundamentally, right, we have an opportunity for people to say, I disagree, right? I don't think that's right, or I don't understand that. How do we think about the kind of wrestling about those questions through a process, and that can look like a lot of things, but like through some kind of process that affords you the opportunity to engage in meaningful ways and substantive ways that are not simply just kind of attacking or throwing stuff at the opposition, whatever it might be, as we're getting into a political season, right, of seeing political ads and attack ads and all this kind of stuff. Like, how do we not do that? And how do we engage in some substantive, meaningful way that is relational, that is able to acknowledge and hold those tensions? Tension, conflict is inevitable. The confrontation about it doesn't have to be. And so finding that kind of path, I think, is really important.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. We had a similar type of conversation here this week. Over at Potter Fall, there was a community conversation.
Yes, exactly.
Did you attend that?
I was unable to, but actually two of my graduate students that I'm working with were trained as some of the facilitators and some colleagues from K-State at our Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy. So I feel like for not being there, I knew a lot about it and have heard a lot about it. But it highlights, I think, some of what I was just alluding to a moment ago, this ability to have some of these kinds of conversations that are not typical or maybe that we're accustomed to. That was very, very much a kind of an opening type of conversation. We would refer to it as like an exploratory conversation, right? They're not resolving something. They haven't decided some city policy or an ordinance. And that's fine. Like, those conversations don't necessarily have to be that. If they're trying to be that, then you want to be explicit. But if it's also an opportunity to say, hey, we need to talk about some of these underlying things that are impacting the way people live, how they go about their day-to-day life. Like, that's really important. And so that kind of breadth of opportunity, I think, is really important. So I'm glad that's happening, and that's the first of a series of conversations that are going to be happening. And importantly, it's not led just by, I think, some of the same kind of actors. And I think that highlights, to me, kind of the robust nature of kind of the civic infrastructure or the ecosystem, if you want to think about it that way, of people who are saying that we need to be able to have these conversations about these complex and kind of thorny issues, right? They're not easy answers, but we need to be able to start to have these conversations, unpack them a little bit, understand the complexity, not so much to resolve them immediately, but at least have it out there.
Yeah. I mean, there were some fascinating things that were said at Monday's thing. I wasn't there either, but I did hear some of the quotes, and I know Caleb James was one of them that spoke. He was on the panel and just kind of sharing a childhood memory of going into a Burger King and mm-hmm. with his brother. He's in a biracial family, and being approached by a Klansman saying, I'm not here to hurt you or anything, I just want to let you know we like to have people stay with their own kind and everything. And that struck me. I'm like, I can't believe that that would happen in this day and age. You know, Caleb's probably about the same age as I am.
Yeah. The I mean, just to stay on this point for a moment is the fact that sometimes it's easy to say these are issues someplace else, right? Mm-hmm. I can look, being in a part in South Carolina, for example, and saying, oh, yeah, right, you've got the kind of historical baggage around some of these kinds of things. And they'll name it or not, right, depending on how it goes. But Kansas is not and was not immune, right? When we look at kind of the history and trajectory of organizations such as the KKK, for example, Kansas was through the early to middle 20th century, you know, really quite robust for chapters and things like that. And actually, there's a slide that I often use when I'm talking, when we talk about kind of things have reached this precipice, things are really intense right now. I'm like, well, you know, we've had these episodes over history, and there's this one incident where there was a representative who literally caned a senator in Congress in 1856 over abolition. And the one who did the caning was from South Carolina, which I noted and took out from one of the talks I gave. But it was all because they were fighting over the period that was referred to as Bleeding Kansas, right? And so Kansas played historically this central role when it was becoming a state and early on trying to figure out if it was going to be a slave state or not. This was a spot. I mean, even here, hearing from locals who have kind of passed down some of these stories, that certain communities were more sympathetic to abolition and not. And when Manhattan was getting settled, for example, there was a lot of these kind of conversations to figure out, like, all right, where are you coming from? What do you support? What do you care about? Right, those kinds of things, because we see those separations of people. And at the same right, so jumping back to your point here. Is that we've got some of these kind of deep roots that show up here. So even though we're out here in the middle, right, disconnected seemingly from some of these types of issues, that's not true at all, right? It's well beyond the boundaries that we might kind of typically frame stuff in. And so whether it's in the north, it's in the Midwest, in the West, right? Any of these regions are affected by these kind of underlying themes. And I'm really lauding. The people who the organizations who have put that conversation on and as they're going forward, because I think we need to have more of these kind of interactions, these conversations where we can at least be introduced to that, to hear that story from someone who lives here and say, wow, this is not some fictitious thing, right? This is not fake. This is embodied, lived experience. And what do we do with that information?
All right, well, let's take a break. We'll come back more in focus with Tim Schaefer here on News Radio KMAN.